Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller is on the air. Tune in for insight and encouragement for living a more sustainable, back-to-basics lifestyle. No matter where you've come from or what the future may hold, we hope each episode will encourage you with topics, guests and stories that inspire your journey towards self-sufficiency. And now, the hostess of Your Preparation Station, Donna Miller.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Your Preparation Station. I'm so glad to be with you again today. And as usual, I'm always excited about a guest. But as usual, we have another great guest with you today. And I hope this gives you a chance to get to know someone you may already be a little bit familiar with, but maybe you'll get to know them in a little different light. I have Dr. Bones, basically. Dr. Joe Alton, the half of the dynamic duo of Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy from doomandbloom.net. You may have seen their ad in Prepare Magazine in the front. You may have seen some of the articles that they have written for the magazine, or you may follow along in their blog. But, you know, they are everywhere. They're kind of like we are. They reach into whatever way is going to reach you best, and they want to be there to serve you and help you become as well-equipped and best prepared as you possibly can be for whatever situation comes across you in life. And this is just a great chance to get to visit with Joe. Now, Amy is off taking care of some other things. She's out doing some of the other things that are necessary for their services to everybody. But I do appreciate Joe taking the time to come and speak with me today. If you're not familiar with them, let me verbally give you a website. It would be doomandbloom.net. It's doomandbloom.net. If you're listening on iTunes and you're not in front of the show page, which has all of their write-up to click through to, and if you don't want to remember that, just come back to the show page. You can click through. If you go to their website, you can see all the things that they're involved in. And I would say, Joe, 90% of it is actually training, teaching. That's what you're here for, isn't it?
Oh, boy, it sure is. By the way, hi, how are you?
I'm good. You know, this is the best part, is I get to visit with friends and other people get to listen in. I think this is what I love doing this for.
Well, it's wonderful talking with you, and thank you so much for having us on. We, you know, that is absolutely, absolutely right, that our focus is education. Mm-hmm. We want to get the average person to become a medical asset to their family, and we want to do it in such a fashion so that it's not daunting, it's not too much of a challenge, and we want to do it all in plain English. And that's our mission. Our mission is to put a medically prepared person in every family.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys have definitely grown leaps and bounds. Your reach has grown leaps and bounds. But what I would like to do with everybody today is to hear kind of what got you started in this. Not every doctor considers preparedness kind of their focus. So what on earth got you started in the preparedness lifestyle?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, pretty much every doctor always assumes that the ambulance is going to be there for them. A rescue helicopter is always going to be on the way. And and it's true that there are a lot of circumstances in which that's not the case. Now, of course, we've always been South Floridian sort of two-week preppers, I guess, always ready for the next hurricane. So we have more than the 3 days that you probably have heard that most people only have 3 days in their food in their pantry and things like that. And we always had more than that. But the issue with us is that we found that even that is not enough, because there are going to be disasters that are taking us off the grid for much more time than you would think that the average storm would do it. So I think that we probably first started with Hurricane Katrina. After Hurricane Katrina, we we, Amy and I, sort of looked at each other and we saw that there were major issues with the medical response that occurred with Hurricane Katrina, not just because of the lack of personnel. There were a lot of people, actually, that good people, medical personnel that were converging upon the Gulf Coast even before the storm was completely over. But they found themselves immediately, almost immediately, overwhelmed with 15,000 patient visits a day for at least for the first few days. And there were a lot of people that, because of flooding, were unable to be reached. So I think there might have been some unnecessary loss of life as a result of not being able to be reached by modern medicine, by the rescue helicopter, by the ambulance. And so we figured out that this is something that there is not a lot of education for. There's a lot of first aid classes, and there are a lot of Red Cross CPR classes and things like that, but there really nobody, at least nobody that was a doctor or a nurse practitioner, were really educating the average person on how to stop major bleeding, how to care for injuries, how to deal with infectious disease, how to deal with a wound that might have to be cared for from the beginning of that it's incurred all the way to the time that it's completely healed. And you know what? That is a big issue. And if medical personnel aren't going to be willing to consider a circumstance where modern medical help isn't on the way, then somebody's got to fill the void. And so we indeed are here to fill the void, and we're here to provide the education that may be needed to save lives in times of trouble. So we started by, first off, training ourselves, learning, thinking from a different mindset. In general, the mindset that you will find that most people, that normal people, quote unquote, think. Yeah, I know. I have to use that word. That most people think. Let's say that they think that basically modern medicine is always going to be there. I mean, what's your goal when modern medicine is available? Your goal when you hit when you come upon an injured person, kind of come upon somebody that's ill, well, I mean, what you want to do is you want to stabilize that person. You want to get them to the hospital as soon as possible, right? That seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Right? But the problem is that there's many circumstances in which you cannot reach modern medical care. And so, therefore, somebody's got to be able to sort of pick up the flag and be able to handle medical issues like injuries and illness. And this is something that we just started doing over the course of time, started writing about it. We wound up putting some articles on a survival blog. It was the first physician, at least, that wrote fish antibiotic articles. I wrote about the truth about expiration dates, and so those wound up in Survival Blog with James Wesley Rawls, and we appreciate his introducing us to the preparedness community. And I guess it just sort of steamrolled from there. I mean, we first wrote under the names, pen names, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, probably about 5 or 6 years ago. But when we wrote the Survival Medicine Handbook, I mean, we started using, you know, our names. So Joe Walton, MD, is what most of the time you'll hear people mention our name as. I mean, Dr. Bones, by the way, just came from an old Star Trek TV show. Captain Kirk called Dr. McCoy Dr. Bone, or called him Bones, and he was called Bones from all the way back in the Civil War when doctors mostly did amputations, and they called them sawbones. And so that's why Dr. McCoy on Star Trek was called Bones. And so I decided to call myself Dr. Bones. And the funny thing about it is that whenever you think of a pen name, always Google it first. Because for the first 6 months after I started writing about disaster medical preparedness, if you Googled Dr. Bones, you'd get a 1991 zombie flick called The Horrible Dr. Bones.
That's awesome. Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's hilarious. Well, I know, you know, as when we first were acquainted. It was several years ago, and that was how I met you, as under the pen name, I suppose, because we followed along some of the things that you did. So it's pretty synonymous with you, I think, in the preparedness industry now. So no one is looking at an old movie, hopefully. They aren't finding that.
Well, you know, we were thinking outside. You know, I was writing a lot of stuff outside the conventional medical wisdom, fish antibiotics, you know, don't throw away your expired medicines, stuff like that. And so I wanted to be able to have the freedom to write that way. And so I call myself Dr. Bones. You know, at this point, you know, if somebody wants to take my medical license away for writing that kind of stuff, you know, go ahead. They're probably going to call me Dr. Bones until I die. Anyhow.
Yeah, I think you're kind of stuck with it now because you're right. It is. It's almost it's not anti-regular medicine, but it's not checking your brain at the door just because you think everything's going to be status quo. Because in an emergency situation, it's not. And you're kind of putting that antithesis to traditional medicine that says, okay, wait. Stop and think.
Right. I'm writing from an entirely different mindset, you know, that a mindset in which you don't get to pass the buck. In other words, that person that's injured is going to get better or is not going to get better because of what you've done to deal with that person from beginning to end as the medically responsible person for your family or group in a survival setting.
And I have to admit, I've always liked this about you guys from when I first got connected with what you do. The way you approach teaching and the way you approach training someone is not 100% self-absorbed, self-serving. It's meant to work in a communal effort, as in for your family or for your neighbor or for those in need. Have you approached it deliberately that way? Because I know preppers in some ways are kind of self-focused. I know that sounds bad, but they get that bad rap that we're kind of, you know, narcissistic, take care of ourselves first, which is untrue, but
yes.
you've definitely approached it from a community aspect.
Yeah, you know, from my end, the truth of the matter is that what I talk about is serious enough that I believe truly in my heart that there may be a life or two that might be saved by some of the stuff that, or some of the things that I espouse in my articles and in my videos and stuff like that. I mean, you know, if somebody has an infected, I remember the After History special after Armageddon, the History Channel special after Armageddon, where the father of a family in a survival setting chops some wood and gets injured, has a cut. The cut gets infected. He's a paramedic, so he knows what an infection looks like. And he goes to the community medical stores and finds absolutely no antibiotics. And so he just watches himself die over the next 2 weeks as a result of an infected cut that goes into his circulation. And so my entire focus and my mission is to find strategies that are going to prevent some of what I consider to be unnecessary deaths. There are a lot of things I'm not going to be able to do anything about. If somebody drops a nuclear bomb on New York, there are going to be people that die. But, you know, from my standpoint, I think that there are a lot of circumstances where the average person, if with the right supplies and with the right knowledge, they could really make a difference. They could save the life of a loved one in times of trouble.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to make yourself as skill set worthy of being able to be that vessel. And I love how you guys approach it as far as, you know, you're equipping others to facilitate saving lives. So I think that's fantastic.
Well, and everybody can do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's within the reach of any person that's willing to put a little time and effort into it.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask you this question because I, too, am a South Floridian by birth and raising, I guess that's the best way. We went through Hurricane Charlie. Yay, that was fun.
I'll bet. I went through Hurricane Andrew. That was more fun.
Oh, gosh, yeah. How many hurricanes have you been through? I just have to know.
I've been through probably, I hate to say how old I am, but I'm the hurricanes, I think Betsy, I mean, even from this, I was here since the late 60s. That's mm-hmm. how old I am. I am like about 1,000 years old. And so I had all sorts of stuff. I was involved in helping out during Hurricane Andrew. I ended up shepherding every pregnant lady in the area that was 7 months or greater, putting them in a hospital and sitting with them as all their bags of water popped as a result of the change in pressure. And so, I did a lot with that particular one. I've been retired now for a few years, so I'm here to help. And, you know, part of the list of doctors that FEMA can call in terms of whenever there's a disaster. But we just haven't had, actually, I think it's been almost 10 years since we actually had a hurricane hit this place.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while. I mean, I don't want to say Florida's due one, but I grew up pretty much my whole life and never had anything. And then suddenly it seemed like they were coming left and right there for a while.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And there is something that every season as a Floridian, you get prepared, you wait for it to happen. But just like real life, if nothing happens, you get lulled into a little bit of complacency that it may not happen, or general populace, I should say, gets lulled into complacency that, oh, no, it hasn't happened. We don't have to worry about it. But I'll tell you what, if you're not ready and it hits, it's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you're absolutely right. And you know what else wasn't a pretty sight is seeing the shelves empty just because of a tropical storm that was a few hundred miles away. I mean, dissipated before it even came here.
Mm-hmm.
You look on any of the news outlets, media outlets, and you see all these empty shelves in stores and stuff like that. So the panic is real, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, the disaster sometimes is not real, but the panic is real. And you need to get these things beforehand. You need to get food and some water, medical supplies, to get all that stuff together.
Well, and the panic can actually ensue other harmful situations. I remember because we did not expect, sitting watching Hurricane Charlie come, it looked like it was going to hit above Tampa, and we were in Fort Myers. So it's kind of like, well, do you run north? Do you run south? What do you do? We were visiting family who left us there, which was awesome.
oh my gosh.
I know. They left and came to North Carolina. And then we thought we would wait it out. It was going to go north, and we knew we were on the less bad side of town, or bad side of the waves or the wind. And lo and behold, if the thing didn't do a nice right-hand turn right into literally the back door of Fort Myers just above it. And so we watched the roof go up and down and you know, lift and lower. We're sitting in a little tiny hallway with mattresses. But the panic after, I think, was the bigger thing. There was domestic violence, like, it rose 200% because everybody was hot. The National Guard was out literally the next day. People were getting in fights over ice at Publix, fights in gas lines because there was no gas. So there, you know, the panic actually can cause physical damage and disaster.
You know that these types of disasters bring out the worst in people, and I think it bring out the best in people too sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some people that are just meant to be there in a crisis, and they're the people that people look up to, and that will actually, you know, bear the load for their family. And I honestly believe that there are people that are put on this earth specifically for that purpose. Some of us are very simply held in reserve. I believe that I'm one of those people myself that, you know, probably if we're lucky, you know, I'm an old man now, so I mean, the rest of my lifetime we may not see a, you know, a global event, but you know, I'm in reserve, and if mm-hmm. I'm in what one day, you know, I needed to fulfill, you know, my purpose was, and here I am.
Yeah, Yep. I think you're right. It does. Those situations, you have to be aware they can bring out disasters, but you have to also be able to rise to the occasion so that you can be the answer to the other, the negative
yeah.
side. You have to be that counterbalance. You need to know what's going to happen, but you don't have to partake. You don't have to be worried about it, but you just have to be aware of it. So I think you're exactly right. You rise to the occasion when called into action. So that's
right.
Wonderful.
You and I, Donna, are forces for good, and we're not necessarily needed right now. I mean, mm-hmm. we're needed right now to spread the word of preparedness, but may not be needed specifically to grow food or to treat illness or to do the other things that we're good at. But you know, we are people that will help and will save lives in times of trouble if it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm. And I like what your mission is, to be able to create more people like that, empower them to have certain skills and knowledge so that they can feel better equipped if they're called upon to rise to the occasion too. I think that's great.
Absolutely. In a few years, I'll be drooling on my shoes. So, you know, I need some youngins to take over for me.
You joke. No, I doubt that. Seriously, it'll be several years, not just a few, several. We're going to take a real quick break, and then I want to help people get acquainted with really kind of everywhere that you are, all the stuff that you do. If they haven't gone to your website, let's give them a verbal, because, you know, they may be in their car. So we'll do that in just a second after we get back from our break.
National Geographic traveled all the way to Boone, North Carolina to select Turtle Island Preserve, a nonprofit outdoor discovery center and Appalachian Heritage Farm, as one of the 100 most enriching destinations in North America. For over 26 years, families have gained enrichment while discovering nature, and more importantly, themselves. In a world where digital screens and push buttons have replaced actual contact with nature, Turtle Island's beautiful campus and knowledgeable staff reconnect its guests to their natural roots. While camping out, visitors learn vast amounts in our non-electric, wood-fired community. Hundreds of hands-on classes are offered, such as beekeeping, woodworking, primitive skills, and more, covering the gamut of early traditional living. A program for fathers and sons kicks off the summer season, followed by a 5-day workshop for adults with renowned naturalist and director Eustace Conway. Turtle Island is a great destination for scouts, school field trips, homeschool, and special interest groups. Please visit our website and then visit our paradise, turtleislandpreserve.org, or call 828-265-2267.
Your preparation station is on the air.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying tuned. I'm here with Dr. Joe Alton, and he is the other half of Joe and Amy Alton, who have written the book Doom and Bloom. Survival Medicine on the Doom and Bloom website. You guys are all over. You've got a lot of things that you're involved in, and I want to kind of go, if it's possible, in the next 15 minutes to actually list everything out that you do. But it might take 15 minutes just to compile it all together. You guys, the website does a good job of kind of drawing people to where their need is, but you reach their need on a lot of different levels, aside from the book of and the articles that you write online. What else do you do? What else can people connect with if that's their way to learn?
Well, we've written, not only have we written the Survival Medicine Handbook, and I want to just say how blessed I am to have the support of the preparedness community for our efforts in putting this book together, because you know, we self-published the book. I even edited it myself. I was expecting a couple hundred people to get it, and the response has been pretty amazing, and so I'm mm-hmm. really blessed on this book. We did write another book also called the Ebola Survival Handbook, and that actually spent a few days on the New York Times bestseller list in health. And I like to say that I cured the Ebola epidemic because when Ebola started sort of ramping up, I said, my goodness, I must write about Ebola and tell everybody what to do. And so, of course, I wrote Night and Day for weeks. And the second that I put the book out on the shelf, I mean, for a couple of days, it was on the New York Times bestseller list, I think 4 days. And then you never heard about Ebola again.
I know. So you must have done it.
I must have cured it.
You totally. No, you know, in all seriousness, that's a great. I like that little claim to fame. I think it's awesome. In all seriousness, you were actually writing about Ebola before it was as mainstream and scary to people. You know, it doesn't get here until they hear it on the big news, right? But you were writing about it long before.
Oh, man. I remember my first article started off something like, you know, I'm concerned about this viral disease that's taken the lives of 40 people in Liberia.
Yeah.
And it wound up taking like 11,000, you know, goodness knows how many total cases there were. There were 11,000 deaths. Thank goodness that it cooled down a little bit. But it's, believe it or not, it's still there. And yet the poor people that have had Ebola actually have issues with their eyesight, with their hearing, with chronic pain. So I feel for these people. And the sad thing is that they probably won't ever get the help that they need because it's no longer newsworthy or sexy enough to be paid attention to. So it's sad for them. I'm glad that, however, there are not a lot of active cases. These viral things are things that come and go, and so we'll probably see it again, but hopefully we'll be prepared for it this time.
Yeah. So you've written at least 2 books, and if you've compiled all your articles together, you've written a couple phone books size.
I'll tell you, and we also actually, to little fanfare, I actually abbreviated the Survival Medicine Handbook. It's pretty weighty. It's about almost 600 pages. Mm-hmm. So I put it into a 250-page book. It had spent the last 2 years on the most wished for list on Amazon. And I figured that, why is that? Maybe it's too expensive? I don't know. So I made an abbreviated version. It was published by Skyhorse Publishing. It wasn't self-published this time. And it's a nice book. It's got a lot of good information, but it's just not as much as is in our book. That book is called, they titled it, The Ultimate Survival Medicine Guide. And you can find that on Amazon also. And that's less expensive. If you just can't afford the bigger book, then there is a smaller, that may be more compact, portable version that you can get on Amazon. It's called The Ultimate Survival Medicine Guide. So that's our third book that we put out. I'm working on a book on infections. I'm working on putting together a series of video casts right now. We're with the nice folks at AroundTheCabin.com and do a video cast, survival medicine video cast, the first and third Wednesdays of each month. So if you want to physically see me make a fool of myself, you have an opportunity twice a month to see us by going to AroundTheCabin.com. We have our weekly survival medicine podcast that is now almost in our 250th episode. And that's Nurse Amy and I talking about all sort of the news of the day as it pertains to, you know, survival medicine. Mm-hmm. And you might find that, some people, we do occasionally inject our opinions about things in there too. You never know what will come up there. We have a very active, surprisingly active Facebook group at Survival Medicine, Dr. Bones, Nurse Amy. Now it's, we've had it for about 3 months or so. It's got 4,000 members. And of course, our other pages are Doom and Bloom and Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. You can find us, our Twitter is Prepper Show, so we've got a presence on Twitter, and we are active on all these things. Their YouTube channel is called Dr. Bones Nurse Amy, and we've got over 100 videos on that, and that's also something we've done relatively recently. You used to actually, the funny, if you look at the first few videos, they're actually gardening videos. And it actually, Nurse Amy's cucumber video, she has a one on growing container cucumbers, actually is the most popular video on our website, on our YouTube channel, with has something like 350,000 views. It's pretty amazing. It just goes, I keep telling her, you got to do the videos because people don't want to see me. I mean, I'm the face made for radio. They want to see your pretty face, Miss Amy. So anyhow, so there's that.
You guys have live classes too. You travel and teach in real life.
Oh boy, that's the thing, man. We've been traveling like crazy. You know how old folks get in their RV and they start traveling the country. We're sort of doing that.
Yay. I guess,
if you think about that. And so we have been this year to Denver, Colorado. We've been to North Carolina. We've been to Oregon. We've been to Ontario, Canada. We've been to Dallas, Texas, Florida, Lakeland, Florida,
mm-hmm.
Atlanta, Georgia. And we're going to be back in North Carolina at the Prepper Camp event that they're putting on there just next week, as a matter of fact, next weekend. And we'll be before we're done for the fall, we'll also be in Houston, Texas. We'll be in Louisville, Kentucky, and we'll also be in South Florida. We're going to do a class in South Florida as well. So you'll have an opportunity to see us. We are pretty much committed to traveling to at least a dozen places and spreading the word, on a regular basis. And we love meeting people. And I can't tell you, you know, how many people make my day by saying that I've done something for them or woken them up to the idea of becoming medically prepared. And every time I hear that, you know, it's like an angel. It's like an angel gets his wings, you know.
Yep. It's true. Yeah. It is true when you actually get to be in the same vicinity as someone who for whatever reason, they've picked up on something you've done or you actually taught the class. You get the real life experience of whose life you've been able to impact, and they impact yours as well.
Yes.
Yep.
It's very. I have to tell you that I learn as much from people as they learn from me. I mean, I've been taught all sorts of unusual, outside the box ways of dealing with issues, and some of them, you know, I think are realistic, and some of them may not be. But it's all interesting. It's just great to hear, you know, what people think, because you know they're always coming from somewhere. You know, their life experiences are different than yours, and their background and their training may be different, and so it's always interesting. I have to say that it can be tiring, but it's an awesome mission that we have.
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. If people have the opportunity to go by doomandbloom.net, you can click on classes and find out where Joe and Amy will be teaching or where you might be able to take a class with them, because you might hear this later after their fall 2015 circuit is over. So if you're listening to it later on, to get the most up to date, Joe, is that the best place for them to go, or sign up for your newsletter?
Yes.
But click
if they
on
sign up for the newsletter, of course, they'll receive a regular, not daily. I don't flood you with stuff, you know. It's oftentimes just monthly or every 3 weeks, you know, I'll send something out, and it'll tell you where we're going to be at. It'll tell you what classes are available. And on the website doomandbloom.net, there's also a page that tells you that's called classes, so it's pretty self-explanatory where we're going to be, what we're going to be teaching.
And you also now have a shop section. You're providing things that you see. I'm trying to pull you in of all this stuff. I understand this life. I understand what you're doing. This is, it reaches into a lot of aspects because preparedness does. You want to help as many people as possible, so you try to find ways to facilitate that. And I think a shop is a natural outpouring of, hey, I've tried these things, they work. Let me help you keep from having to look everywhere for them.
It's you're absolutely right, Donna, because we have had in the early part of our doing this, we've had people asking, what should be in my kit? Do you have a list? Can you print it out? I don't have the time to put all this stuff together. Can you make a kit for me? And so that turned out to be a steamroll. And now we have at least a dozen different medical kits and all sorts of individual items. Nurse Amy is the main designer of those, and I think she's done a super job. But I have to tell you one thing that, we freely publish all the contents of all the items that we have in our kits, and I want people to put together their own kits as well. I mean, if you don't have the time and don't have the effort to make it on your own, that's fine. You can get our kits from us. But I could care less if you buy any of our things, okay? I mean, any of the stuff that's on our store, I don't care whether you buy any of it. I just want you to have the stuff that's on the lists that are in all of our kits. So, basically just take a look at the various kits that we have, personalize them, to redesign them so they make sense for you. I think that is what I think you should, that's what I think people should do. But of course, you can't get off your duff lazy bones and make your own kit. Well, we got kits for you.
Least you'll feel good about what they're getting. That's right. You'll feel good about what they're getting because they've got something.
And it's made. Put together by a doctor and a nurse practitioner.
Yeah, I have to say, yes. As I listen to you saying this, Joe, it's so funny because there always comes a moment when I'm interviewing someone who I know personally that I've been able to talk to over the years that something like that comes out, and there is a big marketing machine for preparedness out there somewhere. I don't think anybody I'm associated with is really on that wagon, but I want to encourage someone who's listening, listen for people who talk like Joe just did. And his big thing is for you to be prepared, not to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. That's so funny. It has literally come up, no kidding, in every interview of every author that I've done so far. And that just warms my heart. Like, you have no idea to know the group of people we have contributing to Prepare Magazine that, I mean, obviously, we give away the digital for free, so it's the same mission. It's get prepared. The more people who are prepared, the less chaos there will be, and the more, back to what you said before the break, more of us that can rise to the occasion when there's a need. So that absolutely warmed my heart, Joe. I love to hear you talk like that.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Well, I'll tell you that, people really need to realize the kind of benefit that they get from the information that you disseminate in Prepare Magazine. There's so much important stuff to know there. I'm not talking about the stuff that I'm writing about. It's just the ramblings of an old man. But basically, there is a lot of people that know what the heck they're talking about that are sharing their knowledge in Prepare Magazine. And believe me, it wouldn't be there unless you made the effort to make Prepare Magazine a reality. And I want to thank you for everything you've done for the preparedness community.
Now, we're just hoping it showcases those people who have the same heart that you do, and that is to serve others. And that's really very important to me. That's the genuineness that in society in general is lacking, and it's a rare jewel to find. So we're really appreciative of it. Something I want to hold till the next segment here, because I actually talked to Amy about it when this was just about to come out, but I want to bring it up again for people who may not be acquainted with it. So I'm teasing them. I'm making them listen through these commercials so that they'll come back for the last.
You're worrying me. I mean, what could
no,
it be?
No. You have too many things going on. I promise it's nothing you're going to get blindsided by. But stay tuned. This, to me, is a very it's a very interesting portion, and it says a lot about Joe and Amy and about how they approach preparedness. So we'll be back after this thing that I've teased you with in just a minute after our sponsors speak.
Here's how you can save $10 on the meal of your choice. Go to millersgrainhouse.com/store and use the promo code RADIO at checkout. That's RADIO at checkout. Or you can call 828-536-4988 during weekday business hours and get the same savings by phone. Either way, your order is shipped to your door without shipping charges. Remember, you can go to millersgrainhouse.com/store or call 828-536-4988 and use the promo code RADIO.
Are you looking to have ducks, geese, chickens? Boy, do we have something to share with you. Stop by ranch-coop.com. These folks build some of the most beautiful handcrafted coops for small areas as well as the farm. They are so easy to put together. It took us less than an hour, and they're shipped right to your door. Stop by ranch-coop.com. Wonderful people to deal with. Beautiful coops that you can use for backyard and homestead fowl. Ranch-coop.com.
Do you have your free digital subscription to Prepare Magazine yet? If not, then hurry over to preparemag.com and start getting each monthly issue sent directly to your inbox. It's easy. All you have to do is go to preparemag.com, enter your name and email address, and you're subscribed. Consider signing up for the premium membership for past issues and exclusive resources. You can even subscribe to the beautiful print version of Prepare Magazine. Visit preparemag.com and choose the option that's most valuable to you. Prepare Magazine, encouraging, empowering, and enriching your journey.
Your preparation station is on the air.
Okay, thank you for staying tuned. And I know you kind of had to because I baited you just before we took the break. I'm so sorry. I really didn't intend to do that. I was just watching the clock, and it was a fortunate little happenstance. And here's the thing is I'm looking at all the things that Joe and Amy do, all the things that they offer, and the attitude behind what they do it for. Why? It's for you. And their approach is definitely not the fear tactic and not the apocalyptic doomsday scenario. And part of this came out, I think it was a year ago, actually. I had Amy on the show, maybe a little over a year. And I don't even know if she unveiled what you guys were working on at that time, but I know it's here now, and that is the board game.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I have it right in front of me, right? And I was saying to myself, you know, gosh darn it, I forgot to mention the board game.
I'm saving that one for this section because, see, to me, that's such a fun approach at this. I love the fact that you guys got this put out, and it's tell everybody about it.
Well, the board game is called Doom and Bloom's Survival with an exclamation point, and this is a way that Amy and I designed that gets that lone prepper to get the rest of the family to put down their smartphones for a little while and play a game, have a family game night, play a board game that actually involves making, first off, thinking about survival because it talks about real survival scenarios, and actually making decisions that they would have to possibly make on their own in a survival setting without, in other words, getting them involved in the preparedness and survival mindset without it being a lecture from the prepper in the family, without it being crammed down their throat by the prepper in the family. And you know what? Yeah, I think you might find that people are more amenable to learning about preparedness and about survival this way than they would by your telling people that the sky is falling or that, even though it might be true that maybe the sky is falling, but, but without instilling fear. This is the problem, is that, you know, preppers are thought to be getting involved in all this stuff because out of desperation or fear or paranoia, things like that. It couldn't be anything farther from the truth. I mean, we're just normal people that want to have the common sense, that have the common sense. It may only make sense to be prepared for the slings and arrows of the uncertain future. Okay, nobody can predict what happens in the future. I'll admit that you probably, dear listener, are probably not going to be affected by a major disaster in the next year. At least I hope not. But, you know, over the course of a lifetime or over the course of your children's lifetimes, you know, maybe that risk isn't so small. So it might be a good idea to think about these kinds of decisions you might have to make, you know, and that's what Doom and Bloom survival is all about. In the game, you're a character that has prepared. So you start off with a certain number of resources, and your hometown, which by my genius, my incredible genius, I called Center City, and I put it right in the middle of the board. So
nice.
So it's right in the middle of the board. It's called Center City. I can't. It's amazing. I was going to call it East Brunswick, but I figure Center City is probably better. So anyhow, your hometown and a lot of the area on the board has actually been taken over by not zombies, not demons, not dragons, but what actually happened. People that want to take what you have, and we call them raiders in the game. And you go out into the world and you get food, you get weapons, you get fuel, you get other survivors, you go to abandoned hospitals to get medical supplies, and you go to various settlements that are on the periphery of the board that might be a safe haven for you and your family. But everything is a challenge. You just don't land on an icon that on a square, actually it's a hexagon, that has food, for example, and magically get food. You have to overcome a challenge of some sort. You have to succeed at a challenge to get that food, and maybe other rewards if the challenge is hard enough. Sometimes it's related to luck, the throw of a dice. Sometimes it involves giving charity to people. Sometimes it involves bartering. So all the things that you would actually have to make decisions about in a real survival setting. And if you go into raider territory, guess what? You get attacked, and you have to survive an attack by raiders. You can use your assets. You can sacrifice your fuel to go faster across the board. You can sacrifice your weaponry to gain an edge in an encounter with raiders. You can sacrifice food to gain an edge in a zone that doesn't have raiders. Mm-hmm. So the mechanic of the game is that you're constantly being tempted to sacrifice your stuff while at the same time knowing you can't win the game unless you have a certain amount of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that type of thing. You always be tempted to use your food up in a survival setting. You may be tempted to use your weaponry, you know, use up all your ammo if you were attacked. Well, and the truth of the matter is that you can choose to go into raider territory, or you can choose to stay in relatively safer green zones. And it depends on you. It depends on the kind of person you are. If you go into raider territory, the risks are greater. There are penalties for failing, but there's greater rewards for being successful. And there's less risks, but there's less rewards too in regular green zone areas. So there are lots of different. It's a pretty cool game. I really, really enjoy it. I have a lot of fun. It always seems to go all the way to the end, to the last turn or two, with two or three people that are, you know, that are right up there with each other. So it's a fun game.
Yeah, if someone is just listening and you get the chance to, if you get the chance to look this up later, they have a separate website also. I mean, of course, you connect through doomandbloom.net, but if you get the chance to look up survivalboardgame.com, you can see the game pieces, you can see the board he's talking about, Center City in the middle, green zones, and you'll get an understanding of this verbal description of how to kind of play this game. But what I think is really neat is you have those multifaceted, for lack of a better word, priority challenges. I mean, is it a priority to be generous to someone to you? Is it a priority to make it to clean water? Which is the priority at this time? Because in a survival situation, which many of us are rarely in, that's really the question. Where are your priorities right now? And will they change later? Will they not? Are they staunch moral priorities that have no change and no movement? Or are they in that gray area?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense, and it's different in the game. In the game, those priorities change a little bit dependent on your situation as you progress through the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in other words, in some circumstances, you know, it makes sense for you to barter. In some circumstance, charity is important. In other circumstances, you know, you may not have the resources that you're able to give other people. I mean, you may need them to survive yourself. And so these are some of the decisions that might actually exist if this scenario was in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried to make it as realistic as we possibly could with regards to that. Some people didn't like that we put dice into the game, but the truth of the matter is that there's luck involved in survival. You can be Daniel Boone, and if you happen to walk into somebody else in the path of somebody else's arrow or shotgun, then it doesn't matter how good you are at doing wilderness stuff.
Well, you're not in control of everything that's around you anyway. The more people will realize that in their preparedness aspect, they're going to realize, I cannot be prepared for everything, but I can have an idea of the contingency. And
exactly.
That's what dice brings to a game like this. There is a contingency, and if you want to realize that someone or something else is in control of those, that's fine. Personal faith, I'm not in control of a lot of stuff, and it's really good. It's a good thing for probably everybody else on the planet too.
Join the club, right?
Yeah. So those things that appear out of control are still circumstantial, but it doesn't mean they aren't designed to happen anyway. So, you know, I think dice is a great representation of that. How else really could you play it? You cannot be in control of everything, and that adds that element of, what are you going to do with those things you're not in control of? So I think that's great. I love that you guys, I remember talking to Amy, and she was really excited because I think you guys had the first prototype out, and you were just kind of goofing around with, you know, what to tweak there. Have you heard many people say they've been able to drag their reluctant family and friends in?
It's very surprisingly, you know, the way we set up the game was with a bunch of hexagons. Instead of Monopoly, you go this way and you mm-hmm. go around the board, and it's always the same way. I mean, you can't play Monopoly and start saying, okay, I'm going to start playing a counterclockwise. You can't do that. So
right.
So basically what we did is we just put a bunch of hexagons starting from the very middle, center city, and all these hexagons that radiated from it. And so what happens is that you can go in any direction that you want, and you can do anything that you want. So the game turned out to be very replayable because you're never doing the same thing twice.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always traveling in a different area. You're traveling, dependent on your needs. You may have to go through raider territories, and you may have to travel to a specific hospital to get abandoned medical supplies. And with this hex pattern, it allows you to go in just about any direction that you need to go in. So it's I think that it really helped the versatility of the game and the replayability. And that's basically it, is you want everyone will play the game once, but you want people to play the game again and again and without getting bored. And
mm-hmm.
so I think we've managed to be successful in doing that. I mean, we really marketed the game, by the way, only to the preparedness, to our core audience. I mean, we really haven't marketed it to a great number of, you know, just board gamers or hipsters in New York or whoever or whatever. So, you know, so we're actually okay with that, but it is a game that everywhere we go, we sell out of it. When I've never brought a game back, after
That's
taking
awesome.
It to a show, once people see it. And the game is, we have Kurt Miller, who did a game called Axis and Allies that was very popular a few years ago. We have Josh Capel of Pandemic who doing the art and the graphic design. So we have, you know, I mean, the game is a visually a pretty game, or not a
it
pretty
is.
Game, good-looking
yeah.
game. And we've made it so that it's almost like a limited edition game. So it's cool.
Yeah, I was really excited when you guys released it. I think it meets a need that is beyond role playing. It because, you know, we can all in trainings or whatever do a role play, but those are all hypotheticals. This has real make a move kind of consequences. You make that move, and here's a consequence. And a lot of variables. I think that's just so awesome. And that was my teaser for people to listen through, because that's kind of a exclamation point of what you guys have been involved in for all the past few years. This has been a kind of a fun exclamation point, I think. Is there anything that I have missed, that we have missed, that we haven't shared so that people can get in you know, involved in stuff that you're doing?
Well, you know what? We are so happy to get people involved and asking questions and learning from us. And, you know, I'll just tell you, my personal email is drbonespodcast@aol.com. So, you know, anybody who's listened to your show, Donna, you know, if they want to ask me a question, just there's my email.
That's great. That is so good. Well, now, I've asked everybody this that we've had the chance to talk to recently, and it's usually kind of one of my ways I like to end a show. What do you see kind of as one of the more pressing things that are coming down the pike for people to consider with their preparedness now, given this specific time and some things that we may be heading into in the future?
Well, I'm concerned about the increasingly unstable international situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we think that the international situation is, it's hard to be isolationist when the people that are in the areas that are in trouble leave those areas and come to your shores. And we're seeing that now. I mean, I'm surprised it hasn't happened more before, but, the chickens are coming to roost, as they say. And these chickens happen to be Syrian in this case, but... You know, as more and more areas become unstable, there are going to be more and more refugees that are going to travel to places that aren't in as bad a shape. Right now, those areas are Europe and those areas are the United States. The character of these countries, you know, will change somewhat, and there'll be a lot of accommodations that are going to be necessary to deal with these people who need help. And the problem that we have with regards to this is that we really don't have an unlimited amount of resources, but we have people who are in need of resources.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I think, a pretty tough situation, and it's a little scary for the future, I think. And if you're not concerned about the future, then, and you haven't prepared, then I think that you're making a mistake. I think it's time to really think about it. Now, what I think about it is I think you need to get your beans and bullets out of the way and start thinking about the bandages. Okay. I mean, you know, doesn't mean a hill of beans. It doesn't mean, and you just shoot yourself in the foot if you don't have the bandages. So here's my little talky talk. My talky talk is very simple. Man, you can't have enough medical supplies. I mean, there'll be a lot of people that'll have stuff that can make wounds, but there aren't going to be a lot of people that are going to have stuff that can heal wounds. And the more materiel that you have that are medical items that can help people get better from an injury, from an illness, you know, the more valuable that you will be to your community. Matter of fact, so much so that most likely your community, if they know that you have skills and you have supplies, they'll probably spend resources just to protect you, because you will be an important part of that community.
Yeah.
And so it's important, number one, to have resources. Number two, to volunteer or to understand that you are going to be a medical asset and be willing to give of your time and and resources to keep your people healthy, and you'll have a community that will withstand any disaster.
You're exactly right. I think people will rally around and realize that the person who has the skill and materials and has focused on caring for others versus wounding or stealing from others, they're a hotter commodity, and people are going to rally behind protecting that. So I think you're completely right. That's wonderful advice. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Well, I'm glad we got to spend some time together today and had a chance to both catch up, and everyone else gets to listen to us catching up. And
it was fun.
Yeah, it was good. And hopefully got to introduce you a little bit more personally to everybody who has a chance to come by. There will be some links below on the show page here, so you can click through those to connect through. I know we threw around a lot of them, but you can click through there and connect. If you are listening and not in front of your computer at the time, just remember doomandbloom.net. Stop by there, and you'll be able to connect with everything that Joe's been talking about, and look for more articles. Usually most of your stuff comes out in the print, so most of the print magazines have articles from, I'm going to call you Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, but Dr. Joe Alton and Amy Alton, you're going to get that probably forever for me, just because that's how we met.
I have no problem with it, believe me.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me today, and I look forward to hopefully I get to see you when you come up to Purper Camp. That'll be good. We hopefully get a chance to say hi.
I hope so. It was great, Donna. Thank you so much for having us.
I enjoyed it. Take care. Yeah, thanks, Joe. Take care. This is Donna Miller signing off from your preparation station, wishing you happy preparedness and joy in the journey, and we'll talk with you again next time. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Your Preparation Station with Donna Miller. We would love to hear from you. Please connect with us at yourpreparationstation.com and on Facebook. Tune in again next time for another encouraging episode. Until then, keep growing and finding joy in the journey.